Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Maggie. Good morning. I'm going to call this regular meeting of the San Diego Housing Commission Board of Commissioners to order slowly and wait for the talking to stop. Thank you. It is 9:01, and to accommodate what has turned out to be a very manageable number of people, but just still, everyone needs to know, there is overflow seating set up in the lunchroom down the hall. We are live streaming video of this meeting to that overflow room. Members in the overflow room will have an opportunity to listen and view and to provide comments if they so choose. This is the same procedure used by the City Council when there's not sufficient space in chambers and overflow is accommodated within committee rooms. To the public listens to the matter until it's time for them to testify, at which time they move to council chambers. Speaker slips are available here in the boardroom and in that room. Housing Commission staff will collect the speaker slips from each location and bring them to the recording secretary. There are three types of slips. If you wish to address the Housing Commission on an item that is not on the agenda this morning, please fill out the white form. Non-agenda public comment will be called first, so please submit those forms now if you wish to speak. Those who fill out the white form for non-agenda comment will be allowed to speak for 3 minutes. If you wish to speak on a specific agenda item, fill out either a yellow or a pink form. If you're speaking in opposition, you are completing a pink form. And if you're in favor, please complete the yellow form. If a large number of people wish to speak on an agenda item, speakers on that item will be limited to 1 minute per speaker, so please plan accordingly. If you wish to cede your time to another speaker, please indicate that on the slip and identify the speaker to whom you are ceding time. When you hear your name, please line up behind the podium. I don't know. And after you have made your comments, you'll be able to return to your seating area, wherever that may be. And public testimony will be taken after staff makes their presentation on an agenda item. We're going to proceed with non-agenda public comments, of which we have two. And we'll start with Martha Welch. Good morning, Martha.
I'm Martha Welch. I'm speaking on the rules in San Diego. AMI's room right now, it's higher and higher all the time. It used to be 30, 40, 50, 60. Now it's higher than that right now. 50 years is affordable. That's another rule. Only the county does this. No one else does like that. Now, I live in Celadon. Now, housing told me 2 years only on HUD. Now, they told me that when I was there. After 2 years, I'll be on Section 8. So that's not right. That's the home rules. I read about that. Only 2 years for HUD. That's not right. Also, that's the only rule here in San Diego. And everywhere else you get on HUD all the time. We live there. You can get HUD all the time. And also, Celadon only has studios 3 sizes and 1 bedroom. And I've seen families in studios, and that's not right. It's a mean thing to do because maybe they can only afford San Diego Square might look good on the outside, but I've been inside. I have friends that live there, and I've been inside. It's not fixed. And again, it might look good because maybe you're not told not to look, but that's what goes on here. At City Council, they were selling some land. They said that they asked you who want this land, their housing. And now we need modern people because we need that so much for teachers and public safety. We need housing, and they could have been housing there. There's about 13 houses could be there, but you turned it down. And I don't think you step up and do the right thing with housing because you didn't take the land. And they're looking for cities looking all the time for land to for housing, and you didn't step up on this property. And I think you should have stepped up for property because you're supposed to be housing and help people to have housing because it would be a good chance to build some houses, might be cheaper something to people, a townhouse, something like that. People could live in or cheaper and afford housing here, and that would be a good thing to do, but you didn't do that. You don't step up. You don't use HUD. See, HUD, I'm from San Francisco Bay Area, so I know about HUD, how it works up there. They have HUD housing, and I know how it works. It's 30% or 28.5% the income. That's how it works here, and it doesn't work here, and I know it works up there in San Francisco. I know how it works up there, and I know it works up there, but it doesn't work here. And that's what's missing for a housing. Now, Section 8, it's years and years here. You don't get off the list. The only reason I'm getting Section 8 is because I live at Celadon. They give you that. You get Section 8. That's how it works. The property you in, that's how you get it. That's how you get Section 8 here. That's how it works.
Thank you, Martha. One final sentence, if you want.
That's all right.
Thank you. And our next speaker is Joy Sunyana. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, be careful of your of what you ask for. You're liable to get it. You remember a meeting or two ago, I was asking everyone to, we all need to be greater than we are already. And I was at home watching CDTV Monday and Tuesday, and I was so excited to see what was happening there, because there was this wonderful collaboration with the city council, with the San Diego Housing Commission, the mayor's office was represented, and the issues were all centered around housing. And there was Mr. Gentry sitting in the front for a long, 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 long time. And it just felt so wonderful to first of all, to see him there. And of course, he contributed a lot and was asked questions and everything. But I wanted to start out with that it just, it makes a difference, and we all can be a little greater. And I felt that on Monday and Tuesday from everybody. So thank you for that. So here's my new sort of refocus a little bit. I was at the Fair Housing Conference earlier this year. And there was a speaker there, and she spoke something that really put a red flag up in my mind about the fastest growing group are seniors. And they're a growing vulnerable population. And some of these are not my words. They're the gray wave, and they have less resources than most of our community. And they're the housing poor, because there's a group of them that just, they haven't owned homes like a lot of seniors have in the past and do now. So I want to ask all of you to, I'm sure there's stuff out there on the senior population. How many are homeless? How many are dying because they're homeless? How many are, you know, all those statistics are probably out there. I haven't seen them really too much. So I know we're looking at the middle class, and we're definitely looking at the homeless, because it's right here. The crisis is right here in front of us. And so I want to start looking, all of us, to start looking a little more at the senior population and how it's going to impact us in the future, how it impacts us now, what happened to them in the past. I think it's a critical, critical thing that we need to look at, because it could be the growing piece of this crisis that perhaps we're not vetting out enough. And just to finish up then, my three P's, you know, are preservation, prevention, empowering. So I was so excited when Mr. Gentry, I believe, was talking with President Gomez, and they were talking about the preservation director is on board, and that we're going to have the list of the covenants that are expiring, I believe, or, you know, a great list for housing coming up this year.
I'm really looking forward to that happening.
So thank you again, and let's all try to be even greater than we are. Thanks.
Thank you to our speakers. Commissioner comments. Do we have any commissioner comments? All right, then I'm going to go ahead and take this opportunity, if my fellow commissioners will indulge me. First, I wanted to flag for the commissioners that there is a grand celebration today happening at noon for 1 o'clock for the Vista Terrace Hills and Coronado Terrace Apartments. We have extended the affordability, and those are going to have a quick grand ribbon cutting today. If anybody would like to go, please join us. And then secondarily, I wanted to ask the fellow commissioners to hear a possible idea for our commission to pursue. So recently, we've seen the idea of a vacancy fee gain a lot of traction throughout the country. LA recently talked about doing it. Vancouver has successfully implemented one, and I believe it's worth San Diego pursuing. So I'd like to know, fundamentally, how many units are being held offline in San Diego. We all know the numbers. We have record low building of new homes. Our vacancy rate is somewhere around 0.5% or 1%. But we don't know how many units are actually owned but held vacant. And we've heard this talked about quite a bit throughout our region, a lot of talk of downtown looking up and seeing a dark skyline and not knowing exactly why that is. So if our vacancy rate is actually higher, I think it behooves us to know when units are being used for something other than housing and just held as an investment, particularly in a housing crisis. Obviously, none of this can or should replace the most, singularly most impactful thing we can do, which is build more housing at all levels. However, I think this is a possible solution, just at least for us to know what the data tells us about San Diego. So my request today is that staff commence a study to identify the housing units in our city that are vacant for 6 months of the year or longer. In Vancouver, they did this by utilizing utility data, which seems appropriate. I don't know another metric that would capture that information as accurately. And then from there, I'd like us to consider a more specific policy proposal if it's appropriate. If it is deemed that there is a large number of units that are being held offline, figuring out what the best way is to reactivate those as active housing and or find out the possibly, as they've done in other locations, levy a fee that we can determine from this dais what would be appropriate, and then use that money to further fund affordable housing. So that's my request today, and I apologize for kind of going off course, but I'd welcome any feedback or comments or anything from staff as well. Commissioner Klempner?
I'll take us further off course. We're gonna make up for 6 months of speedy commissioner comments this morning. I agree with everything that was just said, and I think this is worth pursuing. One of the strengths of this agency that I've come to see is its ability to be nimble and quickly study problems and generate new ideas. This issue of underutilized existing housing is complex, and there's not much hard data. So it's a natural fit for us to work on bringing clarity and new ideas to this conversation. Additionally, I think there are a few aspects of this issue that make it particularly worthwhile. First, there's no doubt that the housing market has been changing rapidly in the last few years, especially in certain types of underutilization, such as part-time vacation homes that are owned by people out of the area, out-of-area investment, and short-term vacation rentals. Those are all on the rise. We've seen these factors repeatedly come up in public debates, but mostly just in the form of anecdotes. And we need hard data, both for the purpose of a potential revenue source that was just mentioned, to better understand the current market, and so that the debates over related issues can be better rooted in actual facts. Second, there's no perfect way to generate revenue for affordable housing, but this one seems to have some clear advantages to the extent that there is available revenue there. The discussion around funding affordable housing is mostly focused on the front end of production or on the back end of taxing local homeowners in many cases. Lost in this debate, I think, is the reality that in many cases, we may be making housing more expensive for the purpose of making it more affordable. And I think we owe it to every full-time resident of San Diego to get a little more creative about potential sources of revenue. This is a beautiful city, and people like coming here. If someone from another city wants to own a condo here and visit a couple months out of the year, I welcome them. I think that's fantastic. But they should also be willing to chip in to offset the impact they have on the cost of housing in this city. Every dollar that they contribute is a dollar less that has to come from us and our neighbors. If Vancouver is any indication, those folks are willing to chip in. Vancouver's empty home tax did not decrease vacancies in the first year. However, it did generate $38 million. Lastly, as Stephanie had mentioned, I also want to see production increase at all levels of housing. And I don't think anyone builds with the intent to carry a high vacancy rate for a prolonged period. But I do wonder what's going on when you see some of the lease signing promotions downtown. And I know that many in the development community have commented on this as well. Rather than us speculating based on anecdotes, let's get a study going and see what that comes back with. Containing this study to anything beyond 6 months of vacancy seems very reasonable to me. If the development community has concerns about this, I'd suggest that we wait and see what the numbers show. And in the meantime, I think we'd all love to hear any other creative ideas they have for making housing more affordable, particularly for those who need it the most.
Thank you. Any other feedback? I don't know how if we can just do this as a direction. We can. That's great.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. You certainly can. I mean, I work for you all, and this is an excellent idea. I will point out and remind you all that about 2 months ago, we did a little bit of a course adjustment at the Housing Commission, and I created a policy department. Sukad Dayal, who is one already senior staff, is heading that up with some staff in it under Jeff Davis's leadership and direction. And we're going to be looking at developing some major policy suggestions going forward. I think it's the right time in the life of this organization to be even more creative, I think, than we've been in the past and look to more solutions. The policy item that Commissioner Benvenuto mentioned was something that's in practice in Vancouver, Canada. I'll point out that back in 16, Azucena and I and we're asked to speak at a conference in Toronto to share some ideas with some Canadians about what we're doing. This past May, we hosted a delegation of Brits here from the southwest of England around London. And so there are ideas out there, not just in this country, but in others where we can learn, we can go, and we can expand. And so what we will take a look at this item, and we will also take a look at anything else we can figure out a way to implement here in San Diego. I think, and again, to restate it, I think it's the right time in the life of this organization to not just ask the why, but the why nots, and see what else we can do to expand our inventory.
Thank you. That was well put. If there's no other commissioner comments, then we will move into the report by the president and CEO.
And my report, Madam Chair, is never brief, nor will it be this morning. Several items of good news I want to just report for the record and to make sure you all know as well. The first is on Monday of this week, the City Council, in its role as the Housing Authority, approved the San Diego Housing Commission's budget for fiscal year 2020. And this time, not only did the Housing Authority approve the $452 million budget submitted without any reductions or changes, but they also added an additional $400,000+ for three additional positions in the homelessness arena. And I'll point out that in that, out of that $452 million budget, this is the first year coming up where we will crest over $100 million of that budget focused on homelessness activities from what was virtually zero 10 years ago. So what was a sidebar part of our operations has become a major central part of it over that time period. I'll also remind you all that this is the largest budget in the agency's history, and as we just indicated, we're going to look forward for expansion going forward. I don't doubt that it's going to come lower than that, at least I hope not going forward. One other thing, Madam Chair, with respect to what you just mentioned, I saw an article in the press this morning that I will commend to you that I think fits into the same mode of thinking. Secretary Carson has made a proposal that actually has been agreed to by Congressperson Maxine Waters, who chairs the House Budget Committee, or House Housing Committee, and those two never agree on anything. But they agreed on this one, and that is that they're going to look toward ways to amend the rules on CDBG awarded to cities to maybe adjust and reduce to those cities that have unreasonable restrictions on growth. To help to target some of the more expensive parts of this country, including in San Diego. And I think that with what the mayor's been doing in the city council over the past 2 to 3 years or so, we're going to be well ahead of that game. But that's a sign that people are beginning to understand you can't just – the rules of engagement are as important, if not more so, than the subsidies to provide housing for poor people. Speaking of HUD, on May the 22nd, we hosted in this room a meeting of the 10 regional administrators for the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And HUD is broken up into 10 regions. We're in Region 9, which is headquartered in San Francisco. And we hosted the Assistant Deputy Secretary, Matthew Hunter, who is also the field director for HUD, and all 10 of the regional administrators from around the country. Including Chris Patterson, who's the new regional administrator for Region 9, which includes us. And so that we've got a lot of good notice within the HUD system. Last month, there were two grand openings of new properties that we have invested in. Both are Housing First San Diego properties, again addressing the needs of the chronically homeless. One was the Alpha Lofts grand opening on May the 7th. There's 52 new affordable rental apartments in Normal Heights within walking distance of a major transit station, I'll point out. Chair Benvenuto spoke at this grand opening event, which I attended, and also speaking there was California State Assembly member Todd Gloria. For this property, the Housing Commission awarded 52 project-based housing vouchers and invested $5.2 million toward the development of the property. Chelsea Investment Corporation was the developer, and the Alpha Project provides the services to the residents. The following week, on May 15th, the Zephyr Apartments celebrated its grand opening. This is a former motel in the Grantville community. I'll note it is north of the 8, not far north of it, but it is north of it. And so it helps to further a goal of moving our activities into choice communities. And this property, we were able to assist the developer to transform it into 84 permanent supportive housing units for veterans who have experienced homelessness. Council Member Scott Sherman, Deputy Secretary of the California Department of Veterans Affairs, Keith Boylan, and I were among the speakers at this event. And for this event, we awarded some 84 federal vouchers and invested a $3 million loan. Affirmed Housing was the developer here, and People Assisting the Homeless, or PATH, provides the on-site supportive services for these residents. On May the 20th, May was a busy month. On May the 20th, Council President George A. Gomez was recognized by the Pacific Southwest Regional Chapter of NARO. You all do know remember what NARO is. And the Housing Commission nominated her for this award, which was presented here in San Diego. And this was because of her efforts to get the Source of Income Ordinance passed last July, which takes effect on August the 1st this year, which makes it discriminatory to take into account source of income for a landlord's consideration of who can qualify to live in their unit. Major non-discrimination step forward, and it's something the state is looking at right now to implement on a statewide basis, but again, we are ahead. There are some other honors that came our way last month, at least we were notified about them, three national and two local. There are three NARO Awards of Merit, which we will be awarded to us at a NARO meeting in San Francisco next month. One is the Rental Assistance Division's completion of a business process reengineering program. And believe it or not, that's the way things get done. You do them in an orderly business-like way, and you not only do a better job, you save money. We also did a comprehensive redesign of the Housing Commission's website last year, Scott and his folks, and that is a major portal that markets what we do to other people. We also received an award of merit for a series of reports that we produced between 2015 and 2018. You all will remember the housing affordability recommendations that the Housing Commission commissioned, which was issued in draft form in December of 15 and then published in January of 16. There was a follow-up report in 2017. You will remember that projected housing goals for the city going forward for the following 10 years, and then a follow-up to that in 2018. And that particular award not only will be awarded next month as well, but that one is a finalist for an award of excellence, which is in the hopper, is competing for one of only about a half a dozen awards of excellence, which NARO will grant at its annual meeting this year is in San Antonio in October. So though all three of those are great recognitions of very different parts of this business, this organization. Two local awards last month. Once again, the Housing Commission won a Ruby Award granted by the San Diego Housing Federation. This one was for the Rehabilitation Project of the Year. the Town and Country Village Apartments. Commissioners Hester, Hubbard, and Davis accepted this award, along with Emily Jacobs from our Real Estate Division and Adam Gutteridge from Chelsea Investment Corporation. This rehabilitation was a partnership among the Housing Commission, our nonprofit affiliate Housing Development Partners in Chelsea. The project extended the affordability of 97 rental apartments and converted 46 previously market-rate apartments into affordable rental housing units for low-income families. Excellent work by Mike Pavko, Emily Jacobs, and all the people here associated with that. And this feeds, again, back into what Ms. Kenyatta said a while ago about preservation going forward, but keeping what we've got as we try to expand. We also, last month, were a finalist for a Taxpayers Association Award, and I'll point out a good one, not one of their bad awards. It's not a golden fleece, but this was one of their good ones. And this was our Path to Success program, operated by our Rental Assistance Division, Austin Zahner and her folks. It was a finalist for the San Diego County Taxpayers Association Golden Watchdog Award this year, because it's a program that makes sense not only for the residents involved, but for the taxpayers who fund most of what we do in the first place. We didn't win, but just being one of three nominees for that was a success in itself. So it was a good month for recognitions for this organization. I'll point out as well that this organization is celebrating its 40th year of existence. We were chartered in January of 1979. This is our 40th year. If you notice, there's been one change to our website already. Last month, we launched a special section of the website that chronicles the 40 years with providing housing assistance to San Diegans. And it includes an interactive timeline and a video of some of the people this agency has assisted over the years. It also recognizes all of the mayors, housing authority members, and housing commission board members who have served since 1979. We also expect to have a gala event in celebration later this year. Once we arrive at an exact date on that, we will let you all know. But this is the first 40 years, I'll point out. Madam Chair, that concludes my report. I'm sorry it was so long, particularly given today's length of agenda, but there were a lot of good things happening here, and I wanted to share them with you all on the record. Thank you.
Very positive. Thank you. congratulations to all the staff, by the way. That's all very well-deserved recognition, and I hope you all know how much you're appreciated. Our next item is the approval of the minutes. Do we have a motion? Moved by Commissioner Hubbard. Seconded by Commissioner, how am I forgetting your last name? Hester, thank you. All in favor? Okay, any opposed? All right, well, I remember to do the minutes, I just forgot names, so I'm making progress. our first item, thank you. Our first item is the application for mortgage credit certificate allocation. I think we have Carrie Tapia. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair, Commissioners. My name is Sujata Raman, and I am the Director of Single Family Finance Loan Programs here at the Housing Commission, and with me today is Carrie Tapia, Housing Programs Manager. We're here today seeking approval from the San Diego Housing Commission Board to submit an application on behalf of the City of San Diego for a mortgage credit certificate program allocation of up to $25 million to assist first-time home buyers in the City of San Diego. Staff recommends that the Housing Authority authorize the President and CEO of the San Diego Housing Commission or designee to submit one or more applications to the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee, also known as CDLAC, during fiscal year 2020 for mortgage credit certificate program allocations in an aggregate total up to $25 million. Staff also recommends that we authorize the Housing Commission's President and CEO or designee to to execute any and all documents necessary to effectuate the transaction and implement the project in a form approved by General Counsel.
Next, I'll tell you a little bit about the history of the MCC program. The MCC program is an allocation of private activity bonds transferred by CIDLAC to the Housing Authority of the City of San Diego. The IRS tax code sets the guidelines for this program. They set the income limits and purchase price limits. Bonds are then converted to mortgage credit certificates and issued to individual homeowners to assist with their purchase. Since the program's inception in 1990, the Housing Commission has issued over 3,600 certificates to families in the city of San Diego. The MCC program offers a 20% federal income tax credit, and it's based on the annual interest paid on the mortgage. It is a dollar-for-dollar savings on the homeowner's federal tax liability. And lenders utilize it as a credit for additional income for the buyers to help them qualify. So it helps increase their income used for the purchase, lowering their debt-to-income ratio, which expands their ability to purchase in our market. The MCC is good for the life of the loan for as long as the property owner occupies the property and has that same mortgage. The MCC program can actually be refinanced, so if any homeowner who has a certificate refinances their property, they can retain the certificate by filing the appropriate documents. So it truly is good for the life of their ownership in the property. We currently offer, as I mentioned, a 20% tax credit. This program actually assists families up to 140% of area median income. So there's two different brackets. It's a two-person household with a maximum limit of $116,000 currently, and three or more people of $136,000. And the sales price limits for this program are much higher than our first-time homebuyer program. In targeted areas, they could purchase a home of up to a little over $731,000. So this program is truly designed to help households at a higher income bracket, although we do traditionally serve families under 80% AMI with this program as well. And this is an example of how a mortgage credit certificate helps a family. This is not redone with the new tax code, which is, I think, everybody's still trying to interpret. But as you can see in this slide, with a mortgage credit certificate, the household's tax basis is approximately $4,000 less than with a non-MCC filing. So they get to deduct 80% of their interest, but then they get a 20% tax credit, which is a much bigger benefit to these homeowners. And that concludes our presentation. We're available for questions.
Excellent. Thank you. Any commissioner questions?
Madam Chair, I'll just move approval.
Okay. Do we have a second? Thank you. Thank you. All those in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Oh, yes.
While we're transitioning to the next one, I just want to point out that, as you all remember, many of our best performing programs get the least amount of attention. And this is one. You notice 3,600 homeowners since 1990. And Carrie's not been here since that time, but she and her predecessors and her folks do an excellent job here, and just wanted just to commend it to you. This, again, a lot of times the best things we do don't get a lot of attention, and this is one of them.
Thank you. Our next item is the award of contract for legal services.
Good morning, Chair Benvenuto, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, and Mr. Christensen. Item 101 is the award of a contract. Oh, I should introduce myself, right? I'm Deborah Fischel-Falk, Vice President of Procurement and Compliance, and with me is Marcel Gresham, the Director of Procurement. Item 101 is the award of a contract for legal services as the current contract expires June 30th with no additional options available. We are requesting you approve the award of a two-year contract with 3 1-year renewal options to Christensen and Spath beginning July 1st. The annual contract amount is $1.2 million. We are also requesting you authorize the president and CEO or designee to increase the contract base amount annually, if necessary, for unanticipated legal issues, matters, and services in accordance with the Housing Authority approved delegation of authority level. A request for proposals for legal services was issued and posted on both the Housing Commission and City of San Diego's electronic bidding system March 14th. 20 packages were downloaded and 3 responses were received. The responses were reviewed, scored, and ranked by a selection committee who recommended the contract award be to Christensen and Spath, as their proposal was unanimously ranked and rated as the most experienced, qualified, and cost-effective response to the RFP. The previous contract, awarded in 2014, was for an annual not-to-exceed amount of $1 million, and the president and CEO, or designee, was authorized to increase the contract by up to an additional $200,000 per year by the Housing Commission Board and Housing Authority for unanticipated legal issues, services, and matters. The current proposed contract amount for an annual not-to-exceed amount of $1.2 million is more reflective of the current level of services and rates. Christensen and Spath rates are well below market rate and are fixed for the first 2 years of the contract. For the remaining 3 years, the hourly rates will be eligible for an increase, subject to the negotiation between the Housing Commission and the contractor, and if granted, will not exceed the National Consumer Price Index, CPI, as set for the previous 12-month period. As a professional courtesy, Christensen and Spath has offered a 2.5% discount for timely monthly payments, which represents a 0.5% increase from the previous contract. In addition, they have offered a $5,000 discount during the last billing period of the first 2 years. That concludes our report, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Do we have any commissioner questions?
Madam Chair, I move staff's recommendation.
Second. Okay. Commissioner Tassin, Commissioner Davis seconds. I've got the names down now. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Moving on to item 102, our fiscal year 2020 Section 8 administrative plan, and this will be Azucena and Carrie Leverett.
Good morning, Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, and welcome back, Charles. I'm Azucena Valladolid, Senior Vice President of Rental Assistance and Workforce Development, and with me today is Carrie Bell, Vice President of Rental Assistance. HUD requires that all public housing authorities maintain a board-approved administrative plan that contains current policies by which it governs the Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher programs. The plan must incorporate the PHA's policies in those areas where the PHA has discretion to establish local policy. The fiscal year 2020 Section 8 administrative plan includes policy changes, including the Housing Commission board-approved fiscal year 2020 MTW plan initiatives. The Housing Choice Voucher proposed changes, including the Housing Commission board-approved MTW plan initiatives, must be added to the Section 8 administrative plan prior to their implementation. The fiscal year 2020 administrative plan include the following proposed changes. Strategies to recruit new and retain existing landlords within the HCV program. Include new policies in the special rental assistance programs. Expand the policy for contract termination due to unavailability of funding. And update the informal hearing policy request. Carrie will now go into detail for each of the proposed policy changes.
The Landlord Partnership Program is a Housing Commission board-approved fiscal year 2020 MTW initiative. It aims to expand the rental opportunities for families holding Housing Choice Voucher programs by making landlord participation in the program more attractive by providing financial and supporting incentives to landlords who rent to HCV program participants within the City of San Diego. Incentives are designed to recruit new landlords and units, as well as retain existing units within the portfolio of available housing. The Landlord Partnership Program strategies and incentives will include the following: an insurance fund to cover vacancy loss and damages caused beyond normal wear and tear that exceeds the security deposit. Leasing incentives will be issued to landlords who, leasing incentives will be issued to landlords who rent to HCD families. A move incentive that will cover HAP overlap up to 5 days in the instance of an existing participant moving from one subsidized unit to another. And we will implement two inspection streamlining policies using existing MTW flexibility. Quality assurance inspections conducted in the skip year will be considered a successful biannual inspection, allowing SCHC to reset the biannual inspection cycle. Additionally, landlords and participants will be permitted to self-certify the repair of minor non-life-threatening housing quality standards fail items of all inspection types. This policy expands self-certification of repairs to include initial inspections. Lastly, we will develop a landlord services unit to provide support to participating landlords. The Landlord Advisory Committee is designed to obtain feedback on how the Housing Choice Voucher Program can succeed in the private and local rental market and address landlord concerns. The intent is to identify best practices, programs, and incentives to attract new landlords to the HCV program. The committee is composed of local City of San Diego landlords, property owners, and representatives from both state and local housing and apartment associations. The MTW Monarch School project was reproposed to HUD in the Housing Commission's board-approved fiscal year 2020 MTW plan. The reproposal will permit the Housing Commission to expand rental assistance and provide appropriate intervention, including permanent supportive housing and services to the families enrolled in the Monarch School project. The Housing Commission submitted an application to HUD's Mainstream Voucher NOFA and received an award of 83 Mainstream Vouchers in September of 2018. The Mainstream Vouchers are dedicated for homeless families that include a person with disabilities between the ages of 18 and 61. Per HUD requirements, we must include administrative policies into the Section 8 administrative plan. A new definition for homeless veteran population will be established to allow homeless veterans scoring for permanent supportive housing through the local coordinated entry system to qualify for housing under the Housing Commission special programs. A veteran who meets the HUD's definition of homelessness has served in the United States active military and has been released from military duty under conditions other than dishonorable will meet the population definition for the Housing Commission's permanent supportive housing programs. The new definition will expand housing opportunities for vulnerable homeless veterans within the City of San Diego. The San Diego Housing Commission's administrative plan provides guidance to the Housing Commission if federal funding is suspended or no longer available in the annual contributions contract. Currently, the administrative plan indicates SDHC will terminate HCV contracts of the longest-served work-able households with non-elderly or non-disabled members when funding is eliminated. SDHC recommends updating the priority criteria for possible contract termination by also including the termination of families who meet the existing criteria and who receive the lowest amount of housing assistance payment from SDHC. The update to the prioritization criteria will ensure that if a HAP contract terminations are required because of lack of ACC funding, the impact will be minimized for families in the greatest need. In effort to simplify processes, RAD is recommending to update the informal hearing request policy. Under administrative file review policy, a family currently has 17 days from the date of the mailing of the notice of an intended action to request for an informal hearing. SDHC proposes to increase the informal hearing request timeframe from 17 workdays to 30 calendar days. This would simplify the internal notification process and provide simpler timeframes for clients.
This concludes our presentation. A summary of the administrative plan changes is included in the board report.
We respectfully seek the board's approval of the fiscal year 2020 Section 8 administrative plan and the implementation of the new policy. Carrie and I are happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any commissioner questions?
I have one quickly if nobody else does.
The informal hearing request policy, how often is that, are folks using that?
The clients have an opportunity to request for a informal hearing at any time where they disagree with a policy that's put in place or a determination that was made on their file. So it can be at multiple interactions with the Housing Commission.
Okay, so but the change isn't proposed due to like a backlog or that 17 days. I'm assuming 17 calendar days is just kind of less convenient when you're looking at your calendar versus
Correct.
30. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's more of a streamlining effort, both internally and externally. It makes more sense to the clients.
Fair enough. Okay. So do we have a motion? Okay. Moved by Commissioner Davis, seconded by Commissioner Tassin. All in favor? Thank you. All those opposed? And motion carries. Next up is item 103, contract for the fiscal year 2020 mental health system serial inebriate program. Hello, Lisa Jones and Mark DeHaunt.
Yeah, that's right.
Good morning, Chair Benvenu and Commissioners. I'm Lisa Jones, Senior Vice President of Homeless Housing Innovations, and Mark DeHaunt is the Senior Program Analyst in our Homeless Housing Innovations Division. We're here before you today to request the approval of the operating agreement with Mental Health Systems, or MHS, for the Serial Inebriate Program. The Housing Commission administers the program on behalf of the City of San Diego in accordance with a Memorandum of Understanding for City of San Diego Homeless Shelter and Services Programs. The Serial Inebriate Program provides transitional housing and wraparound services to individuals living in the City of San Diego. Since July 2010, the Housing Commission has entered into agreements with MHS to operate this program. The current agreement expires at the close of fiscal year 2019 and requires a new agreement, as there are no more options to renew. Mark will now provide you with a brief program overview and the staff recommendations.
Good morning. MHS has operated the Serial Inebriate Program since its inception in January 2000. The program is a collaborative effort to reduce the number of chronic homeless alcoholics who cycle in and out of detoxification centers, county jails, and local emergency rooms. The residential program offers participation in the Serial Inebriate Program in lieu of incarceration as a result of a guilty verdict or plea for public intoxication. Participants opting for program participation as an alternative to incarceration receive intensive services and housing for up to 24 months. Partnering agencies include the San Diego Police Department, County Sheriff's Department, Superior Court, and Health and Human Services. The Serial Inebriate Program provides 56 transitional housing beds and serves a minimum of 145 individuals annually. In fiscal year 2019, 153 individuals have been served. Of those served, 67 remain in the program, and 31 persons successfully completed the program. Of those 31 successful completions, 25 exited to permanent housing. For those exiting to permanent housing, the recidivism rate is only 15%. The occupancy rate for this fiscal year is 95%, and for the month of April, the occupancy rate was 97%. This program, funded by a combination of city funds, including the Affordable Housing Fund and General Fund. The proposed funding sources and amounts indicated on this slide align with previous funding allocations for this program. The funding allocations on this slide reflect a slight adjustment in the City General Fund allocation than what was included in the staff report. The new contract term will be for 1 year, beginning July 1, 2019, with up to two options to renew. The Housing Commission proposes a sole source award of the contract to MHS for demonstrated capacity to operate the program and adhere to contract requirements. The sole source recommendation is allowable under the Housing Commission's Statement of Procurement Policy and is consistent with prior Housing Authority actions. The Housing Commission recommends that the Board of Commissioners take the following actions. Authorize the execution of an initial one-year agreement with two options to renew with mental health systems for the operation of the serial inebriate program in the amount of $419,750 with funding provided by the city's Affordable Housing Fund and city's general fund, and to authorize the president and CEO of the Housing Commission or designee to execute all documents and instruments necessary to implement the approvals. Authorize the president and CEO to substitute funding sources and or increase compensation by no more than 20% of the total agreement amount. That concludes our presentation. We are available to answer questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
Madam Chair, I move approval.
Okay. We have a second by Commissioner, or a motion by Commissioner Tassin, a second by Commissioner Hester. All those in favor? Great. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item 104 is the Memorandum of Understanding between the City of San Diego and the Housing Commission for the provision of homeless shelters and services. Lisa Jones, I assume, sticking around.
Good morning again. I'm going to take this opportunity to introduce Casey Nguyen, our Director of Housing First Administration. Casey comes to us from Interfaith Community Services, where she was the Director of Housing Services. They covered areas predominantly in the north county of our county. She has a lot of experience in our regional homeless systems, contracting for services, and providing direct homeless services. So we're very happy to have her aboard. We're here before you today to present the request for the renewal of the Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, between the Housing Commission and City of San Diego for the city's homeless shelters and services programs. The MOU delegates authority to the Housing Commission to administer the homeless shelter and services programs on behalf of the city. It allows the Housing Commission to allocate funds to these programs and enter into operating agreements with subrecipients. The subrecipients provide support services and housing solutions for individuals and families experiencing homelessness. Housing Commission staff monitor activities under the contracts, including performance, budget utilization, and programmatic outcomes. In June 2010, the City and the Housing Authority approved an MOU transferring the responsibility to administer the city's homeless shelters and services from the City to the Housing Commission. This MOU was amended 3 times to clarify specific programs and address additional funding awards. In June 2014, the City and the Housing Authority approved the renewal of the MOU, and a subsequent amendment was approved in April 2015. The current MOU expires on June 30, 2019. The roles and responsibilities in the new MOU will closely align with the roles and responsibilities set forth in the 2014 MOU. In addition, the MOU will include language regarding the roles and responsibilities with respect to maintenance at city-owned and leased facilities. The next few slides provide an overview of the programs funded under the Homeless Shelters and Services Program MOU. The Day Center Facility for Homeless Adults, located in the East Village neighborhood of San Diego at 299 17th Street, is a city-owned facility which provides space for persons experiencing homelessness to access critical services. These services are available at the Day Center as well as resources for meeting basic needs. Services include restrooms and washing facilities, off-site showers, mail services, telephone and computer access, self-sufficiency needs assessments, and referrals and housing navigation services. In fiscal year 2018, the Dave Center served more than 7,000 unduplicated individuals experiencing homelessness. The Housing Commission and City fund 2 storage facilities where persons experience homelessness can store personal possessions. The programs provide individual storage containers to individuals and families experiencing homelessness that reside in the city to store personal belongings in a safe and secure location. The containers are provided on a daily basis at no cost to participants. The Transitional Storage Center is operated by Think Dignity and provides an additional 400 containers for storage. The program served 565 clients in fiscal year 2018. The particular area of this MOU has been expanded to accommodate HEAP-funded storage programs. We're expected to come over to the Housing Commission in the next few months.
The city's three interim shelter programs provide safe, low-barrier interim housing to homeless adults and families in the city of San Diego. The programs provide stabilization and supportive services to help prepare individuals and families for the most appropriate longer-term or permanent housing. The programs also provide for basic daily needs of program participants, including meals, access to showers and restrooms, laundry facilities, mail services, and a place to store belongings. The interim housing program for homeless adults operated by St. Vincent de Paul Village provides 350 beds. The program served 1,701 individuals in fiscal year 2018. The Connections Housing Interim Bed Program is operated by People Assisting the Homeless, or PATH, and provides 150 beds. The program served 509 individuals in fiscal year 2018. Alpha Project for the Homeless operates the Cortez Hill Family Center, which provides 47 family units. The program served 823 individuals in calendar year 2018. Mental Health Services operates the MHS Serial Inebriate Program Transitional Housing, or SIP, program. SIP began in January 2000 and was initiated as a problem-solving effort to reduce the revolving door serial inebriate syndrome, wherein chronic homeless alcoholics go in and out of detox centers, county jail, and local emergency rooms for the criminal offense of drunk in public. SIP is a collaborative community effort involving the City and County of San Diego, the Police and Sheriff's Departments, the Superior Courts, Health and Human Services, and Mental Health Systems. The Emergency Solutions Grant Rapid Rehousing Program provides permanent housing to individuals and families experiencing homelessness in the City of San Diego. PATH operates the ESG Rapid Rehousing Program on behalf of the City. Using the coordinated entry system, individuals and families experiencing homelessness are assessed and connected to service providers operating programs specific to their needs. PATH's Rapid Rehousing Program provides assistance to individuals and families with short to moderate term subsidy and service needs to stabilize due to unforeseen obstacles or financial setbacks. Assistance may include funding security deposits, first and last month's rent, and ongoing rental assistance subsidies. Once enrolled, clients are connected to services and staff who work with the clients to locate permanent housing. The staff also assist clients with increasing or maintaining income supports while delivering supportive services. Rental assistance subsidies paid to the landlord on behalf of the tenant incrementally decrease over time. The Rapid Rehousing Program serves approximately 125 homeless individuals and families annually. The Housing Commission requests that the Board of Commissioners recommend that the Housing Authority take the following actions. Approve an MOU between the City of San Diego and Housing Commission for the provision of homeless shelters and services for a one-year initial term with four additional one-year options to extend. And authorize the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Housing Commission or designee to execute the final negotiated MOU in a form approved by General Counsel and to take all actions necessary to implement these approvals. That concludes our presentation. We're available to answer any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the commissioners? No. Okay. I, again, have one. This doesn't include the bridge shelter, so that's a separate MOU that we have with the city.
That's correct. The bridge shelters, the MHS storage center, are under one other MOU. The Housing Navigation Center is under another MOU. HEAP is under another MOU. This covers everything else.
Fantastic. And then one other quick, I just wanted to check in. I had heard, and I may be incorrect, or this may have already been resolved, but the day center, you had referenced the showers. Are those showers up and running? Are we having a lot of success with that? The importance, I mean, given some of the access for our homeless population here, I just wanted to double check and see if you guys
right.
have any information.
So the information that came out in the press a few months ago was information about the off-site showers. The showers for the day center have been off-site for about 4 years now. They're housed at Father Joe's campus at the Joan Crock Center. And those showers went under repair. Those repairs have been completed. They're fully back up online. Although I know the city is also looking at alternative funding sources to expand shower availability throughout the city.
Okay. Do we have a motion or any other questions?
Second.
Okay. Moved by Commissioner Davis, seconded by Commissioner Tess.
Madam Chair, just one quick question. Is that day center also known as the Neil Good Center? Is that
yes,
same?
Neil,
that's
Neil Good Day okay. Center.
Thank you. Okay.
Just one other comment similar to what I said a while ago. Sometimes the most successful elements of our work get the least amount of attention. And with all of the attention focused on the bridge shelters lately, the Navigation Center and some other newly arriving responses to deal with the homelessness problem in the city, this is an example of stuff we've been operating now for 10 years, almost. This will be the 10th year upcoming. And it's particularly, I see a couple of heads nodding back there. Compared to where it was 10 years ago, it's a very smooth operation. And to Lisa and her folks, my thank you. This is we're serving the city well, but does not always get noticed. People think they're starting something new in the last couple of years. This has been going on for years.
Thank you, and welcome. Did we vote? We didn't vote. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Most guys. Item 105, our loan recommendation and preliminary bond authorization for Ulrich Street Apartments. We do have a handful of speakers on this one, so if you're not in the room, I'd recommend kind of heading over shortly. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Joseph Carew, Housing Finance Department. This item is the Ulrich Street Apartments. It's a loan recommendation and preliminary bond authorization. Let me see if I can get this thing to work. I'm always having problems with these. Okay, great. The recommendations are first that the Housing Commission approve a residual receipts loan up to $7 million to the Ulrich Street Housing Associates LP for new construction of 95 affordable rental housing units for low and very low income tenants. The project is relocated at 2645 through 85 Ulrich Street. It will remain affordable for 55 years. The loan is contingent on the developer receiving necessary third-party funding. The developer must submit a relocation plan along with a legal opinion to the Housing Commission General Counsel's satisfaction that confirms that the proposed relocation plan complies with all applicable laws and regulations. We went the wrong way. There we go. Second recommendation is authorizing the president and CEO to execute documents, adjust terms as necessary, perform necessary acts, implement with the general counsel's advice, and substitute funds if necessary. However, the $7 million proposed total loan may not increase. The third recommendation is the Housing Authority approve initial steps to issue up to $32,750,000 in tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds, including our usual steps of approving a bond inducement resolution, approving an allocation application to the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee, selecting a bond counsel, in this case Quentin Thimming, and selecting a financial advisor, CSG Advisors, in this instance. Fourth recommendation is the City Council hold an IRS-required Tax Equity Fiscal Responsibility Act, called TEFRA hearing. So this is proposed new construction. It's 95 affordable rental housing units, families. One manager's unit is not restricted. It is a mix of studios, one bedrooms, two bedrooms, and three bedroom units. It's 1.47-acre site. It has 20 unrestricted existing apartment buildings, apartments in five buildings. Those apartment units will need to be demolished in order to build a new, larger project. And that means that there will be permanent relocation of the 20 existing tenants. Lauren and Associates is going to be the relocation consultant, and that consultant assists the tenants to get their federally required benefits. The pro forma budget's $1,251,000 for the relocation costs. And as I stated earlier, the relocation plan must comply with all applicable laws. The developer is the Community Housing Works. They are an experienced nonprofit developer, and they have previously obtained Housing Commission loans and successfully completed those projects. The development team summarized at Table 2, page 5 of the report. I have a location map here. It's in the Linda Vista area. You can see it's near Genesee. Estimated sources and uses, they are requesting $7 million as a residual receipts loan from the Housing Commission. And they're also requesting Housing Authority preliminary steps to approve issuance of up to $32,750,000 in tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds. They will be applying for state tax credit allocation committee approval for 4% tax credits. They're also applying to the County of San Diego for a loan and to the California State Department of Housing and Community Development for an MHP loan. Total development cost is $46,427,114. That results in a $483,616 per unit cost. The project costs do include prevailing wages, and that's due to their use of state multifamily housing program loan money. Federal Davis Bacon will not apply, but the state has their own prevailing wage requirements. There is a summary at Table 4, key performance indicators at page 7 of the report, and a summary at Table 5, page 7, of comparable development projects. Affordability is going to range from 30 to 60% of area median income, and we summarize the affordability, page 9 of your report, Table 6. These are milestones. There's a development timeline on page 10 of your report. If you approve today's proposal, then the Housing Authority would consider the same proposal on June 25th of 2019. We anticipate that if both the Commission and the Authority approve these actions, there would be a application for tax credits and 4% bonds in November. And then in the January 2020 meeting of those two bodies, there would be hopefully an allocation approval. And if the developer is successful in obtaining those third-party sources, then we estimate we'd return to both you and the authority for a final review of the bond issuance. And that would be likely in February of 2020. Estimated escrow closing and construction start would be in June 2020. Estimated construction completion in December 2021. Oh, I lost it. There we go. There's an artist's rendering. Just to summarize the bond issuance, the proposed Housing Authority issuance would be up to $32,750,000. The developer, as usual with all of our bond issues, the developer is responsible for paying all the costs of bond financing. The bonds do not financially obligate either your body or the Housing Authority or the city, and neither the full faith and credit nor the taxing power of the city nor the full faith and credit of the Housing Authority are pledged to repayment. And just to reiterate, of the 20 existing tenants, 15 are eligible for federal relocation benefits. The developer is proposing that all 20 of those relocated tenants would have a waiting list preference in the new to-be-constructed units. So to summarize, what we're asking you to do is to approve a loan, to approve a recommendation to go to the Housing Authority to issue bonds. The loan is well leveraged. It's about 5.5 times your money is going to leverage non-Housing Commission money of about $39 million. Your $7 million leverage is about $39 million of non-commission money. And it creates new units, it creates jobs for new construction, and most importantly, it adds units. Instead of 20 existing units, we end up with 96 units that will be new. Let me turn it over to you folks for questions. There are representatives from Community Housing Works here with us today who are available for questions.
Excellent. Thank you. We're going to go ahead and move into our speakers before we have commissioner questions. Our first up is Sheldon Zeman. Hi. Good morning. You've requested 1 minute.
Let me start again. Okay. Here representing Scott Sherman to express support of the proposed Ulrich Street Apartments. Since 2010, the rate of construction of new residential units within the city has not kept pace with housing demand, especially for very low to moderate income categories. This development will add 96 new affordable apartment homes for families, seniors, and veterans. It is located at the heart of Linda Vista community, north of I-8, and within moderate income area, and close to well-served transit employment, and neighborhood amenities. Ulrich Street Apartments programming also reflects the best principles of sustainability, including energy and water efficiency, and design to encourage and promote healthy living. Our district commends CHW's outstanding community outreach that resulted in unanimous support from the Linda Vista Planning Group. Council Member Scott Sherman offers his strongest support for Community Housing Works to invest in our community by bringing new affordable housing opportunities for our restaurants and residents and families. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Our next speaker is Mary Jane Jagodzinski. And then that'll be followed by Lisa Huff.
Yes, thank you. Excuse me, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, and staff. I'm Mary Jane Jagodzinski. I'm the Senior Vice President with Community Housing Works, and I head our 16-person real estate department. I really want to just introduce Lisa Huff, who is the project manager, also in the room. We have our associate project manager who's worked on this throughout, including the community outreach, Jackie O. And we have a brand-new VP of development, and that's in our room today, Kelly Modane. But we really want to thank you very much for your consideration, and I'm going to have Lisa come up for any specific questions, and I'll remain here if you need me. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Lisa Huff. I am Community Housing Works project manager overseeing the Ulrich Street Apartments development. Again, I just wanted to thank you for considering Ulrich Street Apartments today. And as Mary Jane said, I'm available for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any commissioner questions?
I do. Ms. Huff, if you could, as part of the portfolio of funding for financing the project Mr. Correa presented to us, he talks about you're anticipating having about just north of $15 million from 4% tax credit equity on the project. Do you anticipate any issues with obtaining that?
I do not. The 4% tax credit program is the non-competitive of the two low-income housing tax credit programs, so that should not be there should not be any issue.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Walsh?
Just quickly, I know there's some relocation of the 20 existing tenants. Would you just please walk us through that?
Sure. So let me just grab my notes here. The way it goes is there are 20 apartments there currently. Anyone who lived at the property prior to the distribution of the general information notice in January of 2017, so there are 15 households that lived there prior to that notice being distributed, they are eligible for a permanent relocation payment. So it's basically that payment is sized based on what they're currently paying, the difference between what they're currently paying and what they will have to pay for replacement housing multiplied by 42 to 60 months. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, it answers part of my question.
Okay.
So 15 existing households that were given notice at
Correct.
The time. They're given about 40 months-ish plus payments. The difference between what their next payment will be and their timeline from exiting the current site, how does that take place?
We will communicate with them consistently prior to the construction commencing, and there will be we'll have a Lauren Associates, our relocation consultant, on board to make sure that all those notices are given at the appropriate timing. And so then they will move out probably between 2, 3, 4 months prior to the commencement of construction.
Any further questions? Yeah, Commissioner Hester.
Thank you. So just to clarify, the
the construction starts in June 2020.
Correct.
So that's the time frame we're talking about. Correct. Between now and June 2020. So that gives us about a year. And the difference between what they're paying now and what their relocation is, because you said permanent relocation payment. So there's a lump sum, basically.
Yes.
And then to offset the difference between what they're paying now and what the new rental is, and that amount assisting them for 40 months or up to 40
42 months. To 60 months. It depends on their income.
Right. Okay, I'm clear. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any further questions or a motion? Moved by Commissioner Tazin, seconded by Commissioner Klumpner. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We've got a few developments we're talking about. Next up, 106 is our loan recommendation for Quality Inn. And this will be Emily again and Tina Kessler, I believe. Welcome.
Good morning, Commissioners. Rick, Chuck. The item before you today is a request for approval of a residual receipts loan to facilitate the renovation at Quality Inn. Staff request that the Housing Commission approve a loan in the amount of $5,240,000 to HDP Quality Inn LLC to facilitate the rehabilitation of Quality Inn, a 92-unit existing development located at 1840 4th Avenue, which includes 91 units for transitioned aged youth, veterans, seniors, and individuals with mental disabilities who are experiencing homelessness that will remain affordable 55 years. Staff recommends to authorize the chief of staff or designee to take such actions to implement the approval and delegation of authority by San Diego Housing Commission upon advice of general counsel. Just wanted to remind the commissioners here that we already voted on this particular project previously. This action is to advance a swapping of funds as a result of a competitive CDBG process. And with that, Tina will discuss the project.
Good morning. On November 30th, 2018, the Housing Commission's board approved an MTW grant allocation of up to $5,602,926 to facilitate the rehabilitation at Quality Inn. As Emily mentioned, the actions today will not increase the total previously approved, but rather modify the sources, reducing the MTW grant and authorizing a CDBG Affordable Housing Revolving Loan Fund loan. The acquisition of Quality Inn is part of the Housing Commission's Housing First San Diego initiative to provide increased housing opportunities for homeless. The Housing Commission acquired the property in December 2017 and entered into a ground lease with Housing Development Partners, the San Diego's Housing Commission's affiliated nonprofit development group. Housing Development Partners intends to renovate the property, ultimately creating 91 restricted permanent supportive housing units for homeless. Here's a site map of the property. The proposed project is an existing 92-unit development located at 1840 4th Avenue in the Uptown Community Plan Area of Council District 3. The development consists of a four-story hotel building. Units will be renovated to include 50 studio and 42 single-room occupancy units and one studio manager's unit. Current amenities include a central courtyard, community room, on-site laundry, secured entry, and an elevator. Quality Inn was originally constructed in 1990 and will require renovations to convert the existing hotel rooms. The scope of the proposed rehabilitation includes comprehensive improvements to unit interiors, common areas, as well as improvements to buildings' electrical, plumbing, and mechanical systems. The developer of the project is Housing Development Partners, the nonprofit affiliate of the San Diego Housing Commission, and the property manager is SK Management. Service provider partners include Pathways, Community Research Foundation, St. Paul's PACE, the Veterans Administration, San Diego Youth Services, and Home Start. This slide represents the number of units that each of the various service providers are providing services for. On-site and off-site services may include medical support, daily living support, nutrition and transportation support, in addition to other services as needed and assessed on a case-by-case basis for tenants. The total development cost of the project is approximately $13.2 million, which is about $148,000 per unit. Sources of funds include a Housing Commission grant, a Housing Commission proposed loan, an MHSA proposed loan, and a bank loan. Units will be restricted at 80% of the area median income for 55 years. Additionally, HDP has entered into a 20-year housing assistance payments contract where tenants will pay no more than 28.5% of their income as rent. The property is currently 96% occupied. The developer expects to close financing in the summer of 2019 and complete renovations within 1 year following start of construction. Thank you. That concludes the presentation. We're available to answer any questions, along with representatives from the development team.
We're going to kick it over to our legal counsel first, Mr. Christensen.
Yes, thank you. I would ask that the disclosure concerning Commissioners Benvenuto and Walsh and the CEO, Mr. Gentry, be incorporated into the record pursuant to the provisions of the Government Code 1091.5A7 and A8.
That's because we are on the HDP board as well, just for clarification. There's a lot of numbers. Do we have any questions? No? Okay. I had one quick, and this is a little possibly hypothetical. I understand that this is, we're limiting based on their rent, and that's based on their income, what their rent is going to be, and that calculation of 28.5%. I get that. However, looking at the maximum rents, the studio unit is 1,000 and some change, the SRO is 800 and some change. How do you determine what those numbers are? And if we were ever to climb out of this scarcity hole that we're in with that's driving up our prices, what if there was ever a time when rents be dropped and we wanted to recalculate the rents for our folks? Is that a thing? Like, let's just assume that could happen. Is it a thing that we would, let's be positive. What would occur in such a situation? Because if we ever were able to give further relief, I would love to know how we would do that.
So this particular project is funded through the PBV vouchers. So the rents that are set there are the payment standards. So to pull the what-if button probably would be a larger discussion that would trickle down from HUD all the way to San Diego. And it sounds like Rick wants to make a comment as well.
The voucher program has been in existence since 1975. There was 1 year when there was a reduction in the number of vouchers available to us. That was sequestration in 2013, where we lost 723 vouchers out of our then 14,000-some-odd total vouchers. We saw it coming a mile away. We made plans and provisions for it, and although a lot of families got hurt by not having the resources to them, it turned out to be a non-event in terms of there was no catastrophe for us. If as long as Section 8 is around, this will be the families will be fine. If for some reason Section 8 goes away, given the real estate dynamics in this city from a real estate standpoint, I think we'll be fine. It's just that, of course, the rents would go up.
Thank you. Just so this is more of a federal dictation and something that we would locally have to kind of figure out should the impossible ever happen.
Keep beating on this horse. One other thing to recall, too, is that of these 15,450-some-odd vouchers that we have right now, Zane, if I got that number correct, if we started losing vouchers, the very last vouchers that I would recommend from a policy standpoint that we eliminate would be those that go to support properties that are project-based like this one. So I think it'd have to be a pretty catastrophic event where a program entirely went away that's serving millions of people across the country. It's theoretically possible that could happen. I think it is extremely unlikely.
Thank you. Any other commissioner questions or a motion? Moved by Commissioner Davis, seconded by Commissioner Hubbard. All those in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you. Item 107 is a loan recommendation and preliminary bond authorization for the East Block Senior Apartments. And keep in mind that the following item is the preliminary bond authorization for the East Block Family Apartments, for the commissioner's knowledge. We do have one speaker on this item.
Great. Thank you. The item before you today is a request to take the initial steps to issue multifamily housing revenue bonds and approve a residual receipts loan for the acquisition and construction of East Block Senior, a development providing 115 units of affordable housing that will remain affordable for 55 years. Staff requests that the Housing Commission approve a residual receipts loan up to $6,750,000 to Fairmont Senior Housing CICLP for the new construction of 117 units for low-income seniors. Staff requests that the Housing Commission recommend that the Housing Authority issue a bond inducement resolution for up to $22 million for the multifamily housing revenue bonds, authorize an application and any subsequent applications as needed to CIDLAC, and approve the financing team of Quint and Timmick as bond counsel and CSG advisors as financial advisors. And now Tina will provide some information about the project. But first, we also recommend that the City Council hold a Tax Equity Fiscal Responsibility Act, TEFRA, public hearing and adopt a resolution approving the Housing Authority's issuance of the tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds in an amount up to $24 million. Tina?
The proposed 117-unit multifamily development is located at the northwest corner of Fairmount Avenue and El Cajon Boulevard in the Kensington-Talmadge area of Council District 9. The property is currently a vacant lot. East Block Senior Apartments is a proposed five-story new construction transit-oriented development. The proposed project is part of a mixed-use transit-oriented East Block Collaborative. In addition to the proposed senior apartment component, the property will ultimately include 78 affordable units for families, a future commercial site, and a private community plaza. All financing approvals for each affordable housing component must be secured prior to the start of construction on the collaborative project. Site amenities will include secured building access, elevators, on-site property management, supportive services, and access to the following amenities at the adjacent affordable housing family building. There will be a cyber cafe, an outdoor barbecue and picnic area, and a community garden. Unit amenities include fully equipped kitchens with full-size appliances, central heating, vinyl flooring, and quartz countertops. To summarize the developer's request, you are considering approvals to authorize a residual receipts loan up to $6,750,000 and take the initial steps to issue up to $22 million in multifamily housing revenue bonds. Approval of the bond inducement and TEFRA resolution do not commit the Housing Authority to issue bonds. The bonds would not constitute a debt of the city. If the bonds are ultimately issued for the project, the bonds would not financially obligate the city, the Housing Authority, the Housing Commission, because security for the repayment of the bonds will be limited to specific private revenue sources of the project. The developer of the project is Chelsea Investment Corporation, and the service provider will be serving seniors. Chelsea has collaborated with the Housing Commission on many affordable housing developments over the years and is in compliance on past projects. Total development cost of the project will be approximately $31.2 million, which is about $266,000 per unit. Sources of funds include bonds, tax credit equity, a proposed Housing Commission loan, developer equity contribution, deferred fee, and accrued loan interest. The one-bedroom units will be restricted at 40 to 60% of the area median income for 55 years, and rents will range from $674 to $1,039 per month. The item will be brought back for final bond-related approvals later this calendar year. The developer expects to close financing in December and complete construction in December 2021. Thank you. That concludes the presentation. We're available to answer any questions along with representatives from the development team.
Thank you. We will move to our speaker on this. Joy Sunyata filled out a speaker request.
Thank you, Lisa. Joy Sunyata, District 3. Bonds, bonds, bonds. Thank goodness for bonds. And when I looked at the agenda and I saw there were five loan bond items on there, the one I decided to speak on was the one that had the word senior in it. And if you really read this thoroughly, you realize the kind of wonderful quality of life that the residents are going to have in this facility. It's just wonderful. I love the community garden, the cafe, and, you know, transit and all that. So I certainly approve this, and all these bond measures are so important and so valuable. I'm so glad we've got them. My one concern is when I recently received the San Diego Housing Commission income and rent calculation sheet for 2019. And I really encourage all the commissioners to really take a look at this if you have some time. You probably have already. But the medium, the San Diego medium income is now $86,300. And just take a look at and get a feel for the rent structure that we're heading toward that's called affordable housing. It's a concern I have, and especially for seniors, and some of the things I said in my non-agenda comments, you know, would apply to this whole area where we're headed with affordable rents. I have a concern in that area, but I'm so thrilled that we have this bond money available out there, and glad that you're moving through with it. I love this project. I've loved Chelsea and their work for years, and so thanks for everything. Please approve it.
Thank you. Do we have any commissioner questions? Okay, moved by Commissioner Tassin, seconded by Commissioner... I'm losing my mind. Hubbard. I wrote Davis. I'm just assigning it to people now. We're all excited. It's positive. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. And our next item, preliminary bond authorization for the East Block family apartments.
The item before you today is a request to take the initial steps to issue multifamily housing revenue bonds for the acquisition and construction of East Block family apartments, a development providing 77 units of affordable housing that will remain affordable for 55 years. Staff requests that the Housing Commission recommend that the Housing Authority issue a bond inducement resolution for up to $24 million in multifamily housing revenue bonds, authorize an application and subsequent applications as necessary to CIDLAC, and approve the financing team of Quint and Timmick as bond counsel and CSG advisors as financial advisors. Additionally, that the Housing Commission recommend that the City Council hold a Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act, TEFRA, public hearing and adopt a resolution approving the Housing Authority's issuance of the tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds in an amount up to $24 million. And with that, Tina will discuss the project.
This component of the project is a proposed 78-unit multifamily development. It is at the same project site in Council District 9. As mentioned previously, the site is currently a vacant lot. East Block Family Project is a proposed 5-story new construction transit-oriented development that is part of the mixed-use transit-oriented East Block Collaborative that, in addition to the proposed family component, will include the 117 affordable units for seniors, future commercial, and the private community plaza. All financing approvals for each of the affordable housing components must be secured prior to the start of construction before this collaborative project begins. Site amenities include secured building access, elevators, on-site property management, on-site kitchen and game room, cyber cafe, outdoor barbecue and picnic area, and community garden. The units will be fully equipped with kitchens, with full-size appliances, central heating, vinyl flooring, and quartz countertops. To summarize the developer's request, you are considering approvals to take the preliminary steps to issue up to $24 million in tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds. No loan funds are being requested for this portion of the project. Approval of the bond issuance and TEFRA resolutions does not commit the Housing Authority to issue bonds. The bonds would not constitute a debt of the city. If the bonds are ultimately issued for the project, the bonds will not financially obligate the city, the Housing Authority, or the Housing Commission, because security for repayment of the bonds will be limited to specific private revenue sources of the project. As with the previous project, the developer is Chelsea Investment Corporation, and they are in compliance on their past projects that they have partnered with the Housing Commission on. Total development cost will be approximately $40.5 million, which is about $520,000 per unit. Funding sources include bonds, tax credit equity, a nonprofit loan, developer equity contribution, deferred developer fee, and accrued loan interest. Units will be restricted at 50 and 60% of area median income for 55 years. Rents will range from $1,020 to $1,419 per month for the 2 and 3 bedroom units. The item will be brought back for final bond-related approvals later this calendar year. The developer expects to close financing in December and complete construction in December of 2021. That concludes the presentation, and we're available to answer any questions along with representatives from the developer.
Thank you. Do we have any commissioner questions? I had one. It said in the staff report, it referenced that there's three different buildings that will be on the site. There's the family, there's the senior, and then there was a future commercial. Any idea what that future commercial might look like, or just curious?
I'll have a representative from Chelsea come up to provide project information.
Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, commissioners. My name is Jody Rothery. I'm the Director of Development with Chelsea Investment Corporation, and I really thank you for your consideration for this exciting project. There are three project components, which is the 78-unit family project, the 117-unit senior project, and the commercial project that sits along El Cajon. Our application right now is going to consider the existing commercial along El Cajon for purposes of our submission to the city. There are discussions of a future commercial facilities that are currently in negotiations, but at this point, our commercial component is the existing commercial facility upon along El Cajon.
Thank you. Any other questions or a motion? Okay. Moved by Commissioner Hubbard, seconded by Commissioner Walsh. Sure. Thank you. And our next item is the preliminary bond authorization for Scripps Mesa. No, we didn't vote. All right. All in favor? Any opposed? A motion passes. Please let me stay. we're almost done, guys. The preliminary bond authorization for Scripps Mesa Apartments, we have two speakers on this. We'll go ahead and turn it over to staff.
Thank you. The item before you today is a request to take the initial steps to issue multifamily housing revenue bonds for the acquisition and construction of Scripps Mesa, a mixed-use, mixed-income development providing 53 units of affordable housing that will remain affordable for 55 years. Staff requests that the Housing Commission recommend that the Housing Authority issue a bond inducement resolution for up to $110 million in multifamily housing revenue bonds, authorize an application and subsequent applications as necessary to SIDLAC, and approve the financing team of ORIC as bond counsel and Ross Financial as financial advisor. Additionally, that the Housing Commission recommend that the City Council hold a Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act, TEFRA, public hearing, and adopt a resolution approving the Housing Authority's issuance of tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds in an amount up to $110 million. And with that, Tina will provide the project details.
This mixed-use, mixed-income development is a unique public-private partnership between the development group and the San Diego Unified School District. The project is a proposed 264-unit multifamily development located at 10380 Spring Canyon Road in the Miramar Ranch North Community Group of Council District 5. This slide here shows the proposed site plan for the project. The development will provide both affordable and market-rate rental housing, along with community space, retail space, and a dedicated space for a new student makerspace and community center building. The project is being developed under a long-term 65-year ground lease between the development partners and the school district. There will be approximately 2,000 square feet of neighborhood retail and commercial, and the approximately 4,000 square foot San Diego Unified School District Community Center Student Center. Residential project amenities include a clubhouse, leasing center, fitness center, dog run, pool and spa, indoor and outdoor community gathering space. This slide here is a project rendering of the site that you can see there. This slide here is a closer shot or rendering of the proposed residential buildings and pool area. And here's one more aerial rendering of the proposed project site. To summarize the developer's request, you are considering approvals to take the preliminary steps to issue up to $110 million in tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds. There are no loan funds proposed for this project. Approval of the bond issuance and TEFRA resolution does not commit the housing authority to issue bonds. The bonds would not constitute a debt of the city. If the bonds are ultimately issued for the project, the bonds will not financially obligate the city, the housing authority, or the housing commission because security for the repayment of the bonds is limited to two specific private revenue sources for the project. The developers of the project are Monarch Scripps Mesa LLC and Essex Scripps LLC. Both partners have a proven track record to implement, develop, and manage tax-exempt and tax-credit-financed projects. Total development costs are approximately $110 million, which is about $416,000 per unit. Sources of funds include bonds, tax credit equity, and a developer equity contribution to the project. The developer has elected to provide 20% of the 264 residential units as affordable units on site. The 53 affordable units will be restricted at 50% of the area median income for 55 years. Net rents will range from $713 a month to $909 per month for the 1, 2, and 3 bedroom units. Eligible households and individuals will have incomes between $38,950 to $48,650 based on the 2018 rent and income chart. The remaining 211 units will be unrestricted market rate rental units. This slide here shows the project timeline. The item will be brought back for final bond-related approvals in early 2020. The developer expects to close financing in the spring of 2020 and complete construction by June of 2022. Thank you. That concludes the presentation. We are available to answer any questions along with representatives from the development team.
Thank you. We're going to move to our speakers in favor. We have Sarah Jager, and Angelica Rocha.
As I've lost my voice, and I wish I had a cool story to tell you that I was out at J-Lo last night or doing something fun, but it probably has more to do with two little kids at home. My name is Sarah Kruer Jager. I'm a partner with Monarch Group and have been with the firm for close to 15 years. On behalf of the entire Monarch and Essex team, I would like to first thank staff for their presentation and their work on this project to date. Monarch and Essex are pursuing this bond inducement because we truly believe that we are all blessed to live in this amazing city and region. And for it to continue to be innovative and forward-looking, we need more housing options. Anyone who wants to should be able to afford to live in Miramar Ranch North, Scripps Ranch, or any other part of this great city. This issue affects all of us personally, within our own families, our friends, our colleagues. And today, there are currently no affordable or market-rate rental units in Miramar Ranch North, in Scripps Ranch, in Miramar Ranch North community. And this site is likely one of the last opportunities to provide these housing options in this really desirable community. We've worked hard in partnership with the school district and are especially excited about this opportunity, as staff mentioned, to create 53 new affordable rental housing units, which will be affirmatively marketed to qualifying district employees. These affordable units, again, as staff mentioned, will be reserved for individuals and families whose household income does not exceed 50% of the area median income. So for district employees, that could mean many teachers, school police officers, bus drivers, early childhood educators, school nurses, administrative and custodial workers, and the list goes on. So bottom line, this project will allow residents with a range of incomes the ability to live, work, and play in an area which currently has limited housing options, while also creating opportunities for school district employees to live affordably near their place of work, which, by the way, are at some of the top schools in the entire district. So we have a long way to go regionally. We are committed to partnering with the district to provide needed mixed-income housing and to be a part of the solution. We look forward to continuing engagement with key stakeholders and moving forward with this precedent-setting project and realizing all of the benefits that it will bring to the community, to the school district, and to taxpayers. We have an opportunity, I think, hopefully, to do a lot of good with this project. So I ask you to please support the preliminary bond inducement and allow this process to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. And Angelica Roca.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Angelica Rocha, and I am here today on behalf of Circulate San Diego to urge the Housing Commission to take the initial steps to issue the preliminary bond inducement for the Scripps Mesa Joint Occupancy Project. So in addition to our policy and planning work, we run a program called Circulate Mobility Certification, which reviews and certifies sustainable growth projects that meet a criteria relating to active transportation, proximity to transit, and pedestrian-friendly design. This project was reviewed by an independent review panel and earned Circulate Mobility's certification. The Scripps Mesa Joint Occupancy Project will include up to 50 very low-income affordable rental units on-site, equivalent to 20% of the total units. This will allow residents of a range of incomes the ability to live and work in the area. I'm also here today as a former resident to the area. My family has both rented and owned our family homes in the Sabre Springs community, which is just south of the project site. This area, however, is largely unaffordable for my partner and I to consider as a potential place to start our family. There are currently no affordable or market rate rental units in the area. So in addition to the affordable housing efforts, Circulate strongly supports the community-oriented amenities, and in terms of mobility, bus lines are currently planned along the Scripps Poway Parkway area, which will link the new residents to other areas and regions around San Diego. I'm confident this project will serve the community well and set a precedent for smart development in San Diego for years to come. For this reason, I urge the Housing Commission to move forward with the preliminary bond inductment. Thank you.
Thank you. It's nice to have so many speakers here today. Do we have any commissioner comments or questions? Yeah.
Hi. I think it's a great location for this project. My question is, how many the bedroom sizes, 2 to 3 bedroom units, and what is the anticipated square footage? I'm sorry if I missed that.
Any additional questions? I think the partnership with the school district is fantastic, and I hope that that will help make the lease up very speedy for our affordable units. I know that that is always that can always present some challenges. So I'm hopeful that that partnership will allow a very quick lease up process for folks who are interested. Do we have a motion? Okay, so moved. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. And that takes us, that was our last action item. So we do have a workshop and a discussion on low-income housing tax credits. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out. Take it away.
Good morning again. I'm Emily Jacobs, Senior Vice President of Housing Finance and Portfolio Management. With me today is Michael Pafko, Senior Vice President of Real Estate Development, and we are going to provide a general overview of the low-income housing tax credit program.
So in the way of introduction, here are a list of things we're going to cover today. We're going to provide a brief history and overview of the program, explain how tax credits work, go through the different types of tax credits, explain who participates in tax credit transactions, what a tax credit is, how tax credits are calculated, other sources of financing that are coupled with tax credits, and examples of tax credit projects. And I should mention, again, this is an overview. If anyone wants any one-on-one time on this, we're more than happy to schedule that. So let's go through a brief history and overview of the tax credit program. So it was created in 1986 to fund affordable housing with public-private partnerships. It provides affordable housing developers with federal tax credits, which are administered by the state and sold to private investors who contribute equity to the project in exchange for tax benefits. Developers use this to acquire, construct, and rehab low-income housing developments. The tax credit program has finances about 110,000 affordable units nationwide each year, about 3 million since inception. And in a typical year, a tax credit supports about 95,000 new full-time jobs. So let's talk about the housing tax credits finance. They finance new construction, acquisition and rehabilitation, developments in urban, rural, and suburban locations. And it also serves low-income families, seniors, individuals, and residents with special needs. And due to a recent change in the code, the affordability maximums are now up to 80% AMI while using a blended approach. Rents, including utilities, are limited to 30% of the household's income. So how do tax credits work? I think this is the fun part of the program, actually. Each state receives a per capita amount of credits annually that are then allocated to projects. Developers submit applications for their developments through the state agency, the California Tax Credit Allocation Committee, and tax credits are then awarded. Tax credits are sold or syndicated to corporate investors, which in turn offsets their federal tax liability. So here's a little diagram that illustrates the process. If you notice at the top left, that's the federal government. So I'm going to kind of give you a silly analogy because I think this will help cement kind of what happens here. So think of the IRS as grandparents. So grandparents want to give their kids money to go out and do good in the world with, right? So they give that money to their 50 children, the different states. And then the states say, okay, how do we maximize this? We're going to give our children this do-good money, and they need to go out and do good. So these children, we'll call them Jack and Jill. Jack and Jill are civic-minded, and they want to do something great for the world, so they're going to do affordable housing. Now, they have some cousins, Mr. and Mrs. Google. They're motivated differently, but they see a good thing when they see it, right? So they're going to invest in Jack and Jill's housing development, right? And then all the way through the process, the grandparents want to periodically check in and tell us we're not doing this tax credit thing right. And then the states say, oh, no, we don't want to hear from the grandparents too often. Every 3 years, we're going to show up and make sure you're still doing good and that those receiving the benefits still need this do-goodingness. So all of this sort of is the circle of life for a tax credit, but I thought it would be helpful to, in a family dynamic, show how all of these interrelate together. And this has honestly been the most successful program. It has earned bipartisan support, and it's just really a great example of public-private partnership. So let's talk about the type of tax credits. There are two types. 9% credits and 4% credits. Now, the 9% credits are awarded through a competitive process. They developers will apply to the California Tax Credit Allocation Committee, and there are two competitive rounds each year. The 4% tax credits are awarded through a non-competitive process and are typically coupled with tax-exempt bonds. So the bonds are allocated through CIDLAC, the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee, and also issued by the San Diego Housing Commission. Thank you. So who participates in these tax credit transactions? Well, the local government, such as the commission, the city, the county, and Civic San Diego, the state through TCAC, CITLAC, HCD, and CalHFA, the federal government, IRS, HUD, VA, and private lenders and investors, so your construction and permanent lenders, your tax credit syndicators, and tax credit investors. I would like to highlight the Housing Commission here. They provide a vital role in that not only do they issue bonds, not only do they issue gap financing, they issue vouchers too. And this is really, those three elements are very important in a successful transaction. So let's talk about some types of investors. So you have your syndicators such as National Equity Fund, Boston Capital, Richmond, WNC, your big banks such as Citibank, B of A, your corporations, Exxon, Google, Microsoft, insurance companies such as Nationwide, and even private citizens invest. So when it comes to actually getting a development over the line, it truly does take a village. A project manager is coordinating negotiations with the seller and then getting through design and working with your legal and financial consultants to make sure that the financing makes sense. Any other funders that are coming to the table, local officials, community planning groups, just to make sure that there is community support for a particular development, lenders and investors and construction teams. So it takes, it's quite a bit of orchestration to make it happen. And with that, Mike, we'll start with what a tax credit is.
Thank you, Emily, and good morning, commissioners. So what is a tax credit? It's technically a dollar-for-dollar reduction in tax liability that corporations use to reduce their taxes. And as Emily indicated, they're provided by the government to help finance these affordable housing projects by providing upfront equity in exchange for the tax benefits down the road. So I'm going to try to walk you through an example of how investors use them to offset their tax liability. So in this example, a corporation has taxable income of $1 million after netting out $300,000 in deductions. At a corporate tax rate of 35%, they would owe $350,000 in taxes. And assuming they were able to purchase and use $250,000 in tax credits, again, a dollar-for-dollar reduction, they would end up owing only $100,000. I'll have to point out that we'll have to change the slide because the corporate tax rate is now 21%, but you get the idea. So how are tax credits calculated? So this next slide shows the formula for determining eligible basis, which is the first step. And to keep it relatively simple, each development project has eligible costs, such as for design and construction, that qualify for tax credits. And those costs are multiplied by the percentage of affordable housing units in the development, and then by applicable basis boost to determine the tax credit eligible basis. And that eligible basis is what the state agency used to allocate the tax credits. Okay, so this is where it gets exciting. A lot of detail on here, but there's a punchline on the bottom. So this slide shows the tax credit formula used to determine the total dollar amount of equity that can be generated for a project. So in this example, we have a $39.8 million total development cost for a project. And it shows, if you look at the bottom, that a 4% tax credit deal can generate $12.3 million of tax credit equity, and a 9% deal can generate $24 million. So that's about 30% of total project cost for the 4% and about 60% of total project cost for the 9%, which is obviously a large way of going towards funding the total deal. Okay, but what are some other sources of financing in the tax credit transaction? So if you know we're looking at 30 to 70% that are covered by tax credits, there's obviously a need for additional funding, which we call gap financing. And here are some examples, and you know we'll point out that the Housing Commission plays a major role in filling those other financing sources. So the Housing Commission allocates tax-exempt bonds, Section 8 vouchers, other soft loans and grants, and then also developers use private loans and mortgages. And here are some examples of gap financing sources that help fill that gap. We have the HOME program, the City of San Diego Housing Trust funds, Inclusionary and LIEU, CDBG funds, also other funds outside of the commission, including AHP from the Federal Home Loan Bank, and then we often see the MHSA program, Mental Health Services Act, which is administered through the county. And here are examples of a few tax credit projects. These will probably look familiar to you. Zephyr Apartments in Grantville, Alpha Lofts in Normal Heights, all tax credit deals, Luna Pacific Highlands Ranch, Mesa Verde Navajo Community, and of course San Diego Square. So this is the senior project the Housing Commission completed in 2015. So I think we'll just stop there. We can open it up for questions. And again, we're happy to do a deeper dive onto any of these slides that have a lot of detail if you want to do one-on-ones or a small group.
Thank you. Thank you for that. It's so important that we are well-versed in such a critical piece of funding for affordable housing. Do we have any questions, follow-ups?
Madam Chair? Mike, great summary. What impact, if any, do you see coming down the pipe on the ability to continue to use these tax credits, the capacity of it, given the lower tax rate that we've gone to?
Well, you know, the market's adjusted somewhat. So, you know, initially when the lower tax rate came out and a lot of the changes were happening, we were seeing that investors were getting weary and tax credit rates were going down significantly. I think the market's adjusted in a lot of ways. We're seeing some of that equity come back, higher prices, and I think overall the industry looks for other soft funding sources or different things that are filling it. But we're still seeing equity prices in the high 90s, even you know around a dollar. So while I think it took a little bit of a dip, it wasn't as significant as some people initially had anticipated.
Bear with me a minute. I need to use another metaphor. I think the family metaphor, Emily, was great. But think of building a bridge from starting from the opposite sides of the river and trying to meet in the middle. That's another good metaphor for this program. It can be horribly complicated in detail, and that's for both of you the best simple job of describing that I've ever seen. But if it works right, it's an extremely great program. On the one hand, you've got the credits flowing down from the federal government. The feds allocate to each state based on population, and the state, each state develops a competitive criteria to allocate credits out to the public. And the developers will compete for these for the 9% credits. The 4% credits are easier to get, but obviously not as valuable. On the other side of the river, you've got a developer trying to build a property. And so they'll put together their criteria for the deal, and then they'll go to Sacramento to compete for this money. Basically, they're competing for the money to buy down the cost of the property. And there are basically three kinds of subsidy in this world for housing. There's supply side, which is what this is, buying down the cost. There's demand side, which is what vouchers is, paying from the consumer standpoint all along. And then there are internal subsidies where you have like an 80-20 deal where some of the people are helping to overpay for others underpaying. You've got to have some sort of subsidy to make these deals, all these deals work. And that's just you have to. Since 1986, when this program came into being, it's been the biggest driver of housing development. The problem, though, is that it is based on market dynamics, and the value of a credit can change, as Frank, as you were alluding to, based on the need and the competitiveness. When this program first came out, and I worked for a tax credit syndicator in Chicago before moving here 11 years ago, we allocated these throughout the country. And a syndicator or an investor will basically try to sell you money, the way it works. They're going to want to invest what they see as their tax savings, but they don't want to give it all away. They don't have to. They're going to compete. So which means if you're a developer, you want to buy as many of these dollars as you can with the credit as the market will bear. So you get a lot of competition and you get fluctuations in the value of the credit. You go back to the late 80s and early 90s and a credit was worth about 50 cents on a dollar. Not very much because it was an emerging industry. There was a lot of risk assumed and it was priced accordingly. You get up to about 10 years ago when it got really mature just before the crash hit. It was really probably 15 years ago. And in some cases, a syndicator, an investor, will pay more than a dollar on the dollar. They would lose money on the money that they sell you. And that was really great for the developers. The reason a developer or an investor would do that is as it's played out over time, most of the investors are financial institutions. Used to be Fannie and Freddie. They're back in the market again since they got their troubles taken care of. B of A, Chase, Citi, people like that. And those big banks also have what's called CRA obligations, or Community Reinvestment Act. This is a safe, secure way to meet a CRA obligation, which has been around since 1977, and also make money off of it. It's a banker's delight. And so you get these, typically bankers or other financial institutions, or it could be other investors. One of our early investors in our company was Warren Buffett, is that they can get a credit, they can make money, they can do good, but that means the market is going to vary. When the crash hit in 08, the value of these things plummeted then because, again, there was a lot of risk established in the marketplace. There was overbuilding to take care of, and nobody knew what was going to happen. So the prices would drop down into the 90-some cents on the dollar, but it's since come back. And it will vary as well. Any investment on the West Coast is safe. You're going to get good bidding on money here. You go into rural Mississippi or Kansas, different story. More risk, less money. So that's the complicated factor here. It's a private market program. It's dealing with tax expenditures rather than direct government expenditures. There can be fluctuations here. The value, I'm giving you all that to say one of the things that makes a developer competitive in getting this tax credit award out of Sacramento in the first place, and this is the big you got to have in order to do an affordable housing deal. If you don't get the tax credits, nothing else matters. But to get the tax credits, you have to be competitive with Sacramento's rules, and one of the rules right now is local participation. So the money that we get from the City Affordable Housing Fund, that we use as gap financing, has a humongous leverage effect for a developer getting this award in the first place. That's why, although the cost of these properties look astronomical, and I'll point out that the Ulrich property a while ago, if I remember correctly, had about a cost of about $344,000 per door. Our investment was about $76,000 per door, which is a huge leverage factor, which means we could take this local money and expand it. So what I'm getting at is this is complicated. You've got to think in this binary way coming from both sides of the river. But if you can make it work, it is the best single driver of affordable housing development going forward. Now back to the grandparents for a minute. The enforcement mechanism for this is the IRS. And an investor will lose all of their tax advantages for property falls out of compliance with the proper regulations, which means if you're either working for an investor or you're a syndicator like we were putting it together, you don't want to mess around and honk off Bank of America or Citibank or the old Fannie or Freddie. So you're going to make sure it works properly as opposed to dealing with HUD where you can negotiate with them. The cows come home, they're probably not going to harm you. But so you got an IRS enforcing it. It is a big driver here, and I'll say to the staff here, Mike and Emily, we do the best job I know of anywhere in the country in putting this together, inducing deals, and serving the community as typically a silent partner helping to make it work.
Thank you. Anything further from the commissioners? No? Okay. Well, then I think that does it for today's meeting. Thank you, Mike and Emily. We are adjourned at 11:08.